what are some things that would be useful for them to know about hypnosis and about Ericksonian hypnosis?
Well, first of all, when Bandler and Grinder began bringing NLP out into the world, and particularly the first things that they were studying was the language of various masters in the field. John Grinder always says, you know, if you walk around with a hammer in your hand, you're going to see lots of nails. So when Richard was impressed with the high quality of the work that Virginia Satir was doing with clients, John's assumption was that it had something to do with her use of language. So immediately they studied her use of language and created, as you know, the patterns. Structure of Magic, Volume 1 and 2, which are great linguistic analyses of Virginia Satir. And for those who are into that sort of thing, you know, that's great. And to be fair, linguistics is at that level of study was a little complex for the rest of the world. And you notice that these were not the books that ultimately became popular about NLP. Mm. But they were the important foundational material. That something about the language, and clearly, by the way, Salad's reputation, I think, is based around the study of language, and particularly this is a real focus area of yours.
Yeah.
But after they published that book, Gregory Bateson, who was at Santa Cruz at the time, said, "Well, it's funny that you should say these things, because Virginia's use of language is very specific, very precise. You know, really, in some interesting ways, quite directive. You know, and he said that Margaret Mead, his wife, and I, he said, know a man in Arizona who does just the opposite of everything that you've written about in this book and gets equally impressive results." And that was a reference to Milton Erickson. So when they went to see Milton Erickson, what they discovered is, unlike what they'd expected about hypnosis, which the best way that I think about traditional hypnosis is it's a hypnotist trying to put ideas into your head. Mm. You know, what they came out with instead was the discovery of something about how to draw ideas out of, or how to draw a person out. Erickson says that the real problem that patients have, now mind you, he's talking about psychiatric patients, and he was a psychiatrist after all, so it's not just the usual I want to start my business kind of patients, but I think it's nonetheless quite true for all of us, that the issue with people is that if they're having problems, it's because they've lost rapport with their own unconscious mind. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the real function of hypnosis and real good hypnotherapy is to help a person reconnect with themselves in a way that allows a natural dialogue to take place and that natural evolutionary unfoldment that is just so wanting to happen to occur.
And what we see from Erickson's experience and, you know, from yours, I'm guessing, and my own experience is, as you reestablish that connection between the conscious and the unconscious mind, all of a sudden things unfold and new possibilities emerge, and yeah, People suddenly start making great decisions. And,
yeah, I was a mess before I came to this.
I think that's pretty standard for anyone becoming an NLP trainer.
You know, something that that Stephen Gilligan talks about a lot, makes reference to a lot as a real good model for this, is the story of Helen Keller. The American deaf, dumb, and blind girl who, aside from her stint at pinball, which wasn't what made her famous, Helen was so desperately wanting to make contact with the world, and just unable to do it in any conventional ways. Her biography is fascinating, by the way, because she was able to navigate around her family farm by using her sense of smell and an awareness of where various things were growing on the property and stuff like that. It's just uncanny. But so wanted that contact and just couldn't seem to be able to make it. When Anne Sullivan came to her, that contact was created. It opened up doors that had previously been unavailable to her, because she now had a way to touch in. I think there is a Helen Keller in all of us. You know, reaching out with your hands so that you don't run into the walls and doing your best, you know, to get around and really wanting to be able to do it effectively. And that the model that that really comes, by the way, half of it comes from Helen, but the other half of it comes from Anne Sullivan herself. From the standpoint of doing therapy or doing change work, something that that Gilligan would call sponsorship, being present and allowing that emergence to take place, and in fact insisting that emergence can and will take place. What a lot of people don't realize, and some folks are familiar with a piece of theater, The Miracle Worker, which is the play about Helen Keller's life and opening up. In The Miracle Worker, it literally is a two-week period of time during which Anne takes Helen out of her family's household and is alone with her in a cabin on the property.
And Anne was Keller's mentor.
Her teacher, yeah.
Her mentor,
exactly.
Her teacher.
She was hired to try to help us get control of this girl, mm-hmm. you know. And herself, by the way, a student of Alexander Graham Bell's, not to be dismissed, a rather important thing. And also herself, nearly blind.
Oh.
Had some in a fire, in fact, when she was quite young, and so a real sensitive woman who simply insisted, I know you're in there, and God damn it, I'm going to get you out, you know, and so she did, but literally 2 weeks worth of time, finger smelling, all the stuff that people might be familiar with, to try to communicate with her, and Helen wasn't really registering any of it. At the end of those 2 weeks, when she went back home, all of a sudden, everything came out at once. That is, Helen spoke her first word. She had actually said the word water, as a child would when she was an infant, was the first word that she had spoken, and it came back. But when it came back, she also learned, she understood finally what this fingerspelling was about, and that these gestures had meanings and were ways of interacting about stuff that was going on in the world, and she learned something like 87 words or something in the first 2 days.
Holy smart.
I mean, once the door was open, you know, she was ready to go for it. And I just think folks are like that. You know, the good news is, you know, I suppose you could go out, you could open an office, and I'm amused by this, but the idea of having an office with a neon sign in the window that says hypnosis works, 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 you know, flashing and stopping the traffic, is an interesting thing, sending out lots of advertisements and flyers and stuff, trying to convince people, you know, that they should come to hypnosis. But I think the truth of the matter is, when you start doing good work in the world, you know, people find out about it, and they're not only going to be there to, you know, to be your clients and students, but they're going to be there because they have an appreciation that something in them is about ready to take flight.
Well, and it's interesting that you say that. I was with Michael Neal, who's a very successful coach, recently, and it was in a training course, and people were asking, you know, how should we approach marketing and niching and that sort of thing as a coach. He goes, do you want to know how to massively increase your success as a coach, the amount of money you make, the amount? And everyone's like, yes, please. And he says, become a better coach. He said, because the best coaches all have the kind of lifestyle that they want. They don't necessarily all make seven figures, but they all have things set up the way they want them to be. The best coaches all do.
Sure.